Next up is the last of four short conversations recorded at this year's Verve Poetry Festival. And in this instalment, I chat to the winner of the Verve Poetry Competition, C.I. Marshall. It was great fun getting to know Consuelo over the couple of days that we were in Birmingham together, and listening to her talk about marathon running, San Francisco, and the Playboy Club in the city was illuminating. Here's Consuelo. Or, you know, me again. And then Consuelo. Hello, Verve. How are you doing? Come on, cheer. Come on. We're nearly free from poetry. But you've got one more bit of nonsense from me. This is the fourth and final. I'm wondering whether I should mention this because they might not go out in order when I release them. Oh, I've said fourth and final, so I've dictated when this has to be released now. Fourth and final short conversation with poets at the wonderful Verve Poetry Festival in Birmingham. And today I'm joined by the fantastic C.I. Marshall, originally from Northern California, but has travelled here from Chapel Hill, North Carolina. Consuelo was the winner of the Verve Poetry Competition 2018. And we're going to begin with a reading of that poem.
Thank you, David. Myself as a Playboy bunny, San Francisco Playboy Club. Black fishnet tights on legs that seems to stretch clear to Treasure Island. Dishwater hair spiraled up into a French roll. Never go wrong, cover girl makeup icing my face. Maybelline triple thick mascara coating my lashes like fresh macadam on your pony's hooves. If you could see me, you would know that Tabby, the Hutch mother, ordered a Fredericks of Hollywood blow-up girdle and matching bra for me to wear under the cutaway bunny costume. Leaning over to hear a man's order in a husky voice, my rabbit ears would transform into horns, the man now a goateed goat on hind legs butting heads, the odor of musk almost enough to knock everyone flat over. Is it perfectly clear to you how the click clack of my high heels on polished wood never slowed down to shoot the breeze with guys wearing suits from Wilkes Bashford with shoes of calfskin shipped from across the Atlantic? Here is what really happened. Pulling on a pair of men's shorts, Danskin leotard and Nikes, I ran the Mayor's Cup marathon. And on a stage in Golden Gate Park, Mayor Moscone, a month before he was shot, placed a gold medal over my head, saying I was fast, fast as an autumn wind whipping the bay.
Thank you very much. Do you know, I used to always say to people, I don't care about first and last lines. Don't keep telling me that poems need to begin and end well if there's enough meat in the middle of them. But people keep contradicting me by writing really excellent last lines, and I really love that fast, fast as an autumn wind whipping the bay. Would you mind explaining a bit to the audience and to our listeners how this poem came about?
I've been wanting to write this poem, trying to think, probably for 45 years. And I didn't start writing until 20 years ago. So I've had this in my running around in my head because I actually did interview to be a Playboy bunny at the San Francisco Playboy Club, which is really hysterical. And so the poem's supposed to be funny, and people don't laugh, but maybe that's because they don't remember the Playboy Club or they weren't. And an interesting thing I told the audience and those of you who heard me when I read, I just love this. I'm very interested in architecture. And the 1966 Playboy Club in London was the final design of the Bauhaus architect Walter Gropius, which I find to be very, very amusing. He was a very serious man, and a very, you know, his work was all concerned with light and space, and it's beautiful if you've never seen it. So I thought that was interesting. So what happened was, I had never been able to write this poem, and so when I saw the verb contest, I think I saw it on Twitter, and I really wanted to, I thought cities, yeah, I know about cities, and San Francisco is one of my favorite cities. It's, if you haven't been there, it's very, very beautiful. It's got beautiful bridges, and the bay is beautiful, and it's got the best coffee in the world, and it's got steep hills and great car dealers, and of course now it's kind of too expensive to live there. But anyway, that's what happened. And I sat down, and I, you know, obviously they didn't hire me for obvious reasons. So I had to put an ending to it. And I was a very serious marathon runner. And I remembered, I just had this vivid image of, and this was just before the AIDS crisis hit. It was in 78. And I had this vivid memory of Mayor Moscone placing, it's on a ribbon, the gold medal around my head. And then a month later, he and another supervisor, Harvey Milk, were shot in their offices. So I guess it was a great thing for me to do so well in the marathon, but it was also very tragic and very American that they were shot.
Yes. You said that this obviously been germinating in your head for a very long time. Is that usual for your writing practice?
I think someone who's lived the type of life I've had, which has been extremely varied and extremely different than most people's lives. When you get to a certain age, these things just keep coming up in your head. And you think, you know, these things are, and I teach, so I love to tell the students about, you know, things that happened when I was younger, or the same age they were, and how different it was then. So yes, it's kind of, I have a lot of food for fodder, I guess we'd say in the States. I have a lot of experiences, a lot of really unusual people. Some of those people are quite well-known people. I just heard a young woman out in the street. You have great music here. And she was singing Free Falling. And I'm just a huge Tom Petty fan. And I just got in. I don't know what the money means here. So I just grabbed money. I don't even know what it was. I just threw it in her guitar case. And I just told her, I said, yeah, Tom Petty forever. I'll get off on a tangent, but I was on the strip in the 60s. The Rolling Stones were walking down the sidewalk. I saw Jim Morrison and Whiskey A Go-Go, and there was 25 people there. And I've written a poem about him, and that's another poem that I haven't completed. I mean, I've stuck away someplace.
I once saw the Ordinary Boys walking across Clapham Common.
That sounds good to me.
Sorry, very self-indulgent of me. I was wondering if there's a connection between the long distance running and the germination of ideas, because I'm a middle and long distance runner myself, and I have a very similar relationship to writing as well, I think, in that I don't write for a while and then things have to sit with me for a while.
When I ran marathons, I didn't use my mind. I wrote splits on my, this is way before, I mean, the watches weren't that good, so I would take a Sharpie and write my splits, which would be my times that I was supposed to be, you know, 10 miles, 20 miles, 25 miles, that whole thing. But I didn't use my mind. I ran Boston. I mean, I ran too many, way too many. It's probably one of the problems, but in terms of brain cells. But what I learned later in life, I couldn't run anymore because you deteriorate the vertebrae in your spine from the impact. And no one told us that, but I found that out. So I started doing yoga. I got my certificate. I'm very interested in that. And the biggest thing that yoga taught me was introducing my body to my mind and having them being the best of friends. And because I've been able to do that through the practice of yoga, and actually I'm stronger now probably than I was when I was running 125 miles a week. And the breath is also, I wasn't really cognizant of my breath when I ran, which sounds absurd, but I wasn't. So it's that blending of the mind and the body, that running, I wasn't conscious of it or I didn't use it, but now I use it a lot in my writing, a lot. I mean, it makes me sit down. It there's a lot of things that I use that balancing of my mind and that being able to tell my mind what to do and it will actually do it.
That point that you made about writing the split times on your wrist, I often talk about long distance running to people in terms of it's not a slog in terms of you're not out running 10, 20, 40K. You're breaking it down in your mind into splits and to kilometers or miles, much in the same way that you might break a collection or a manuscript down into smaller pieces and break down the points in your life into smaller parts, manageable parts.
Yes. I think one thing I would say when he was saying that, it triggered again, these cells kick in. I think I can actually grow new ones now. Anyway, the fact that you can pull these things out and they come back to you and you can actually write them and you can control them much better than you could have before. And that's a major thing. But the other thing that I was going to say, too, is a discipline. I mean, there's no way that you can run a marathon unless you're really disciplined. And, of course, that takes some mind control, too. But that discipline and that time, like I have to get this poem in, you know, the calendar and Poets and Writers, and I'm always looking at that, and I have it on my own calendar, and I have all these, you know, ways to make myself do it. And it's that sense of time, that big digital clock that they invented, I think, in, I don't know, the 80s. And I always see that because it's on the finish line when you've run a marathon. So I always see that digital clock. And so that helps me to be able to finish a manuscript, to be able to finish a poem, to meet the deadlines.
Talking of finishing, we're running quickly out of time. So we're going to take a second and final poem. But I'm really annoyed because I want to keep talking, but we're going to have to finish with a poem. Thank you, Consuela.
Okay, thank you. Okay, this... Well, you'll know who it is. It's in the title, so I'll just read it. I could have had you, Dr. Scholl. Someone would have paid cash for my yellow VW bug so I could get a ticket on Air Cosmos to Stuttgart, meeting you, settling down in the Minerva blue Porsche. After whizzing on the Autobahn, we toast each other in candle glow. The crags of our noses, the gleam of our eyes, shifting like colossal heads carved from Mount Rushmore. Let's get back to your shoes. You designed them. They made you famous. In the Black Forest, factories poured them out, shipped them from across the ocean where they sat on shelves in narrow cots for a box. Svelte, like anything in design research, footwear for the minimalist, the uncluttered mind. Women with a desire for their toes to grow up free, heels unscarred by leather's razor. United we were by all those muscles surrounding our toes and our forefoot that held on to that wooden sole as we walked. I'm convinced it was your sandals, Dr. Scholl, that kneaded my calf muscles, sent them pulsating down to Nike Air Trailwinds over Heartbreak Hill and crossing the Bolston Street finish line. We didn't buy these sandals in frivolous shops in Carmel or San Marino. No, we bought them at drugstores, not chains, but those with names like Mallory's and Olson's and McDougal's. For them, we paid $12.99 a pair, choices of red, white, or navy leather over creamy grained oak. If you dropped your hammer pounding shingles, no need to go down the ladder. Just pull off your Dr. Scholl's. Pound that nail flat into the tar paper. And if someone gives you trouble like a kid brother or big sister, the town billy goat or an excited boyfriend, off goes the sandal. No one to bother you after that. It's soul slamming into a finger, hoof, or better yet, someone's bare naked head.
Thank you to C.I. Marshall. Thank you to Verve 2018. I love this festival. Brilliant. That was C.I. Marshall. He stuck around till the very end. Grab a biscuit, etc., etc. So this anthology I was telling you about, I'm not going to list all the names of the poets in the book because there are too many, but just as a little taster, we've got work from Helen Mort, Travis Alabanza, Melissa Lee Houghton, Nick McCullough, Luke Kennard, Kairani Baruka, Zaina Hashimbek, Susie Dickey, and Mary Jean Chan, to name but 9 of the 28 poets. If you want to know more about the book or what else is coming up in the series, then get over to lunarpoetrypodcast.com, where you can also find a full transcript of this episode. You can also find us at silent_tongue on Twitter or Lunar Poetry Podcast on Facebook and Instagram. This episode and the accompanying transcript were made possible with the generous support of Arts Council England, specifically the South West Office. And as I said earlier, if you like what we do, then do tell your friends, it helps a lot. And if you want to go even further, then why not leave us a review over on iTunes? Thanks again to Snazzy Rat for the music. I'll be back at the end of August with episode 117. These episode numbers are so far beyond anything I ever thought I'd achieved, they seem a little ridiculous now. But in episode 117, I'm going to be chatting to Andrew McMillan about his brilliant second collection, Playtime. Thanks for listening. I still can't believe anyone does. Much love. Bye.